Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
Ever wondered if that UFO sighting was a secret government project?
Not because they didn't go to the moon, but because they seen something on the moon they weren't supposed to.
Or if ancient civilizations really had alien architects.
Like, so Roswell, obviously they think they recovered crafts and beings.
On Theorist Theorizing, wild speculation meets seasoned storytelling.
How they dug 2 kilometers below these pyramids and created all the structures that we're now finding.
Join the theorists as they dive into UFOs, cryptids, government cover-ups, true crime, and the weirdest theories the internet and humanity has to offer.
Giza and the pyramids itself being an energy source, you know?
It's not a lecture. It's a round table of curiosity, comedy, and what if.
Maybe they got tipped off by these U-boats that fled to Argentina, that there was something there.
Theorist Theorizing. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to Nightmare on Film Street, the horror movie podcast for the casually obsessed. I'm Kimmy.
I'm John.
And we are back with another film for season XI, the Mortuary Collection from, it says 2019 on the internet, but it technically came out in 2020, so we're going to say 2020.
This is always the problem, looking movies up on the internet. They show you the premiere date, and if it premiered at a film festival like Fantastic Fest, that will be the date for the movie.
Yeah, also 2020 was a COVID year, so
that's the other fucking problem.
So, like, how many years has it happened since then? 1.5.
Today we are talking about the Mortuary Collection, which was released in the void.
Earlier this year.
That's how we should describe it. It was the void.
It bummed me out when I saw how many years ago the listed date was for this movie, because I was like, yeah, this movie's only been out for like 2 years. I guess we could do it again. We could talk about it.
It's still a brand new movie.
Fucking 5 years? Ugh.
But a movie that Scary. We knew was immediately in the new Halloween rotation the moment we saw it. Like, this is a movie that just like screams Halloween. Even though it's not like overtly pumpkins everywhere Halloween, it has the Halloween spirit, and it's a movie that I always look forward to watching every single October.
And it's got bite-sized cinema, which is perfect for Halloween because everything is bite-sized.
I think that this might be in my top 10 horror anthologies of all time.
I think so too.
Right?
Yeah.
Do you like it more than Trick or Treat? Do you want to say that publicly?
I don't know if I'm ready to answer that.
Okay, that's fine. And on a microphone?
They're on the same shelf right now.
That's right.
In my heart. Fuck. Yeah, it was great rewatching this because it's been a couple years since we'd seen it.
Yeah.
And I think that was the perfect amount of time because I had forgotten.
I think it's been exactly 12 months since we've seen it.
I had forgotten it just enough that I was like, fuck yeah, these are all great.
Every single one of these stories is amazing. And just like the spooky set design in this movie, A+.
That's one thing that's really great about this. And what I love about a horror anthology where the creator has ownership kind of over the whole thing.
Yeah.
Because aesthetically, every frame of this movie feels like it's from the same movie.
Yes.
And there's a lot of like consistency in the style that, one, it's just also a style that's like way up my alley. This like timeless 50s spooky haunted time period. I'm very about it.
Very kitsch, very dark.
And but it's consistent throughout all the individual stories, and even like the one where you're locked in a bathroom for 5 minutes and that's all you get.
Yeah.
It still feels like it's in the same world as the rest of the movie.
It exists in an antique shop where you might buy a haunted object, right? Like, is that essentially what you're going for?
It's the Warren's basement.
Yeah, okay. I like that a lot. Yeah, no, like Creepshow, like Trick or Treat. It is always great when you have one director handling the entire project, because you need that. Like, I like all horror anthologies.
I love even horror anthologies. Yeah,
The ones that go in wild different directions from segment to segment.
Yeah, and that's totally a valid horror anthology. Like, I love the curation from a single artist, but also it is fun to have a bunch of different voices, though you do get a thematic mixed bag.
Yeah, and but...
It is a pillowcase filled with trick-or-treat candy.
But it's what makes this one feel like it exists in a world. And, which makes sense, because the framing device is that we have a mortician relaying a bunch of strange and dark deaths. And
what a great premise for a horror anthology.
Incredible, right?
Because you know the characters, or one of them, is going to be dead by the end of the story. And like,
well,
what?
You assume.
What is the lesson we're going to learn? He's telling stories about deaths.
Yeah, I mean, don't look too far into it. Like, the first time you watch it, just enjoy it. It's perfect because you would assume all of these deaths happened in the neighborhood. Like, if he is the mortician,
well,
for
they do
the
happen
town,
in the neighborhood.
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm saying it all works.
Definitely like an H.P. Lovecraft neighborhood. But
yeah,
it's all in the neighborhood.
If everybody in this town should move the fuck out, like, something goes wrong for everybody.
So I can move the fuck in.
Basically, yeah. We want to drive that market value down so we can get ourselves a nice haunted house, die in a tragic way.
I need a turret.
Become a fun story. A turret. Yeah. Clancy Brown's the mortician in this movie, and he's incredible.
It's one of those roles that, like, just based on his voice alone, you're like, how has this not happened sooner?
Yeah.
Were we just waiting for him to get old enough to play a creepy mortician?
I mean, he's playing older than he is.
A creepy master of ceremonies?
Yeah.
It's insane. Like, his voice just lends so well to it.
Yeah, it'd be like, oh, we got Vincent Price to narrate this horror anthology. It's like, well, of course you
You're
did.
You're like, oh, surprise, surprise. Yeah.
We should get more Clancy Brown horror. Yeah, I've been saying that since Pet Sematary 2. Like, he is insane in Pet Sematary 2. He's on another level in this movie, though. It's very... What's a better way of saying chewing the scenery? Like, chewing the scenery never sounds like a compliment, but he's just relishing in everything.
He looks like he's having a lot of fun in the character.
He came to Fantastic Fest.
Were we there?
We were there. We did not see the movie in the theater. We fucking idiots. Ended up getting a screener and watching it in our RV. Like a day or two later, we have made a horrible mistake.
I do not remember seeing this in the theater, and I'm very sad about it.
Yeah.
Okay,
even brought some of the little puppets from the end of the movie.
No!
Yeah, so if we had have interviewed
like
Ryan Spindell.
Like the little fire
boys? Yeah, if we had interviewed him at the time, it was just him and Clancy Brown and this little fire boy puppet.
Why are you retelling me this? This is so depressing.
There's a lot of depressing stuff about this movie. For instance, the Mondo Boys soundtrack is no longer available on Spotify.
No! John, stop!
But they did recently release just the song Suicide as a single. You can listen to that one track.
That's a good one.
We used to be able to listen to this soundtrack all year.
Oh, man. That's another great thing about this movie is the music is banging.
Yeah, again, you've got one creator who handles all of it.
Which is a surprise because there's so much individuality in all the songs.
There's so much variety.
Don't say that.
Yeah, you've got, like, kooky songs. You've got, like, songs that are just, like, haunting Guillermo del Toro-style scores.
And, like, quirky retro.
Yeah.
And they're all earworms. They're all bangers.
Every single one of them.
Yeah, the ones during the second segment, though, are really good. Those are my favorite songs.
The segment with Jacob Elordi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The safe sex segment.
The casting across this entire movie is great, but... I don't know who to... I don't know who's out there taking credit, being like, I knew that he was going to pop off before he popped off. Like, either the casting director or the director himself was just like, we got to get this kid because he's going to be somebody. And here we are. Before he was Guillermo del Toro's monster, he was Ryan Spindell's dick monster.
Yeah, and they hit him right at the right time because yeah. he blew up from that HBO show that I can definitely remember the title of.
Euphoria.
Thank you.
Yeah. He's in everything now.
Which, yeah, and he is in everything.
He's going to be in Wuthering Heights with Margot Robbie?
I don't understand.
I don't get it either. He was in Saltburn, which you watched.
Everyone saw.
I didn't. I mean, I saw all the GIFs. Does that count? I saw all the GIFs. I know.
Don't say GIF.
I feel like I know the movie.
We're a GIF household.
Look, I've been steamrolling through talking about this goddamn movie, so let's just zoom right back and let's just continue obsessing over Clancy Brown. Wraparound story's great. Love a good wraparound story. His makeup is awesome. He's weird. And he is the exact kind of person I want telling me spooky stories. And this is what happens when somebody comes to his door to answer the help wanted sign out front. Looking for a new mortician's assistant.
Yeah, and it's kind of like this smarmy young woman who is, I would say, like, between the ages of, like, 19 and 23.
Okay. Very specific.
The smarmiest years of your life.
To sort of get a sense of the job, she wants to hear some of the... Because he's always like, oh, this is a house of dark tales and misfortune. She's like, tell me about it. Let's hear about it.
Much too much for you, for a girl, a young human being such as yourself.
Yeah.
I must scare you with stories of haunted bathrooms and love lost.
I mean, he starts small. Like, he's just like, all right, we'll dip her toe in the water. Let's see where she's at.
And the first segment is... such a great intro yeah. to a horror anthology. It's so bite-sized. It's the bathroom segment where we're following a character who's just snuck into the bathroom to, you know, go through some wallets. She's pilfered from a party happening outside, and curiosity gets the best of her. She wants in this medicine cabinet.
I don't even know if it's curiosity. I think it's greed.
Curiosity to see if there's anything worth swiping from the medicine cabinet. And it reveals, you know, another world to a tentacly realm.
Which definitely leans further into your H.P. Lovecraft thought.
Like, yeah.
Maybe this is an H.P. Lovecraft town.
For comparisons, that really only opens us up to that movie set in the rest stop bathroom where there's, like, an entity in the other stall.
Oh, Glory Hole?
Is yeah. that what it is? Glorious, I think.
Glorious. The movie about the Glory Hole.
I don't think it's just called Glory Hole.
Oh, man. But, like, wouldn't it have been on everybody's top 10 of the year if it was? It
would have been so hard to Google.
See, that's why you got to make a movie like that. You need to make it hard to Google.
Oh boy!
That's how you cash in. Make it impossible for the viewers to find it.
But yeah, what a cute little segment.
I love it. Yeah, there's so much storytelling in just how this character acts. She's amazing in this because you think she's just trying to get away from a guy who's bugging her at the party. You know, like, and especially because she isn't in that bathroom for more than 5 seconds before he comes tapping on the door. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, am I crazy or is there like a spark here when we're I'll meet you on the veranda. Yeah, you think she's just trying to get a little bit of time to herself. And then, yeah, you find out that she's a con artist. Like, she's just there working the party.
Smart.
Super smart. I also just love when she's dragging the trash can over to the toilet where she's sitting. It's almost like she's setting up a picnic. Like, she's relishing everything that she's doing. It's just screeching across the floor as she's putting it in place. And yeah, she loves what she does. She yeah. just drinks wine, socializes, and steals everybody's cash.
And a great little bookend on the slimy light switch.
Oh, so yeah, absolutely. Like, when she comes into the bathroom, there's like goo on the light switch. She's like, oh, weird, whatever. You know, no big deal. I'm not going to think about that at all, I guess.
I fucking love it, though. Like, the writing on that.
What a great little button to end mwah. On. The little tentacle comes up and flips the lights off. Brilliant.
Which is just like, how many people have he eaten tonight?
Well, I mean, it goes to show, you're not supposed to open the medicine cabinet when you go to somebody's house.
You're not? I'm kidding. Oh, boy. So segment two, we slip into, I would say that this is probably going to be like the crowd favorite
oh, yeah.
of the anthology, probably everybody's top segment, just because it is so...
gross.
It is so...
it's so gross.
Out there.
I forgot how gross it was. We both almost threw up watching it.
I gagged, like, actually.
You were like, I don't know if I can finish this segment. I'm like, come on, Kim. You got the best part is coming.
It was the water breaking moment
oh, God.
That really, really
All of the frat boys getting covered in the most disgusting goo. Kim can't even talk about it.
Don't talk about it. It's a great segment, though, because you're playing with, you know, like, safe sex and, you know, frat boys doing what frat boys are known to do. And this particular sorority, it seems like they have a tradition of, like, once you've...
This particular fraternity?
Yeah.
I think it's every fraternity.
Well, this particular fraternity has this 67 cherries thing,
okay,
which
sure.
is, like,
yeah.
I guess if you deflower 67 girls, you're, like, one of the elite of the sorority.
Yeah.
And the character we're following, Jake, has got game. And we just follow him on his last conquest.
Yeah. So, yeah, they are hosting a frat party. They're getting, like, all the girls to come out. They're essentially trying to coax them to the party by pretending that they're feminists. You know, they're all about female empowerment, which is why we want to give you these condoms, because now it's your choice. Meanwhile, all they're doing is inviting the girls to come sleep with them over at the fraternity. None of them like condoms by the sound of it. And yeah, like, the dirty little trick that he pulls here is that he hates condoms and he takes it off in the middle of the night. He slingshots it across the room into the camera. And yeah, then they just have, like, a 4-hour crazy banging session.
I love it.
Yeah, like, you're watching the clock flip from, like, 1 hour, 3 hours, 4 hours, and they're, like, doing all these different positions, one of which is just slapping each other in the face. Too funny. And, like, the song changes every time it switches. It's genius. But the following day, he starts to, like, feel weird, and he's got a, like, crazy rash, and it's like, oh.
Well, and he throws up in the toilet, and everybody's like,
That is true. Like, when you look back on it, you're like, wow, he just has, like, severe morning sickness, but everybody just assumes he's got the clap or something. Even when he goes to the doctor's like, ah, it's no big deal. We'll just get you some penicillin, big guy. Except all of the reports say that he's pregnant, which doesn't make any sense. But, like, by the time he gets back home to the frat, his belly is fucking huge.
Yeah, because this pregnancy is, like, turbocharged.
Yeah.
It's, like, a 2-day gestation, maybe?
Yeah, I think this is, it's less than 24 hours.
That's crazy.
It's the following day, right? Which is great. I love that this is the other great thing about anthologies. Like, every story is on fast forward. We don't have 20 minutes of him just going to class and then be like, ooh, my tummy's a little weird. No big deal. I'll just go over here and lift some weights and, like, talk more about how bad we are as boys. You know, like, you skip all of that bullshit. You're just like, hit, give me the beats. That's all I want. I just want the important shit. And I want the blood and guts and gross stuff.
This is another fun thing, too, is that we don't really learn what Sarah, the girl in this, who's kind of set this in motion. I guess she hasn't really, because he's the one that took the condom
off. This is his fault.
She just has something going on with her.
Uh-huh. Yep.
What is she?
A monster.
What do you... Okay. Thanks, John.
Why do you need to know more?
I don't know. I thought we could theorize.
She's a sex monster.
Succubus?
I mean, maybe. I don't really have other... I mean, I guess so. Yeah, like, you could say that.
I do just love that when he finally turns up at her door, the parents are, like, fully ready, eye rolls. The dining room table turns into, like, a birthing table.
Yeah, they do this way too much.
And she is already setting up another date. Like, she doesn't even want to deal with him.
Yeah, that's the other thing. All she is doing is setting up dates. So you would think she wants them to get pregnant. I guess it's just
maybe she's just a horn dog monster.
I like to think of it as this fun game where it's like she is a horn dog monster, but also
you're like the master of your own comeuppance.
Yeah, exactly. Like, she's like, we're going to use a condom. And when they say no, she's like, okay, like, this is on you now, man. Like, no big deal.
Welcome to fatherhood. Except it seems like they die during the process.
Oh, they definitely die.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's an incredible sequence where Jacob Elordi is just looking haggard. Like, frankly, he looks like...
Unwell.
He looks unwell. He almost looks like a Frankenstein monster. He looks real bad. He looks like he just crawled out of the dirt after being buried for 3.5 months.
Yeah, despite having a huge protruding belly, he looks quite gaunt.
Yeah, the color in his face is all gone. And he's looking at these people, and he's just like... How's it gonna come out? You gotta level with me. Just let me know what I'm dealing with. Like, well, it's gonna come out the way that it got in. He's got about 10 seconds to deal with that before we see his entire dick explode.
And it doesn't really come out his dick because she like lifts it out of his like exploded belly.
Yeah, I think it's just it's just trying to come out.
He just popped like a blueberry.
Yeah, that's all it is. Yeah, that's exactly it. But yeah, he's definitely dead. And like the cool thing about it too is that like she takes this little baby and she's like,
We don't see it.
She's very gentle with it and she brings it upstairs and puts it in a crib and she's very quietly trying to sneak out of the room, but she accidentally steps on a little squeaky toy and it wakes up a whole cacophony of babies.
Well, do you think a monster baby would rather play with dog toys or baby toys? I think probably dog toys.
Fascinating question.
Right?
Hmm.
They're also more durable, I think.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think you would go straight for dog toys.
But yeah, so speaking of Jacob Elordi and Frankenstein coming up, which we've kind of touched on, this was the first time, I think, in this entire casting relating to the movie and teasers and posters that we've seen about Frankenstein that I've been like, okay, because he's like 6'8".
I didn't clock it until
he's
you brought it up.
So fucking he's tall in there.
Towering over everyone.
Like all of the scenes with Sarah, and now Sarah could be a, is her name Sarah? Sandra. All of the scenes with Sandra, and she could be like 5'2" or whatever.
Yeah.
But he has to full out hunch and
to kiss her, yeah.
The shoulders so square. I was like, I'm ready.
Yeah, everybody in this movie, people are either like conveniently sitting down around him or he is like looking down at them like he's a monster.
It's like, how fucking tall is this guy?
He's huge.
No wonder why he's famous now.
I think it's the short, like movie stars are usually short.
Yeah, but if you're pretty and then you're also like the size of the earth.
You're like, oh, he's
got
it all.
People are going to notice you.
This
like
is our new Brendan Fraser.
Right?
Okay,
like,
yeah, sure.
The Skarsgårds are all tall.
Yeah, you brought that up when we were watching. I couldn't get it out of my head. It's such a good point.
I couldn't stop thinking about
he's
it.
Massive.
Because I was so apprehensive about the casting, and I've always been a complainer about Guillermo del Toro casting.
Yeah.
I love, favorite director, but I'm like, Who are you casting?
Why'd you do this?
But I
have made that same complaint constantly and been like, oh, this was the right choice. Like you really, Guillermo? You want to work with Bradley Cooper? Like, you couldn't have gotten somebody else? Like, this is your guy for your 1920s evil carnival? It was the right choice.
It was a right choice.
He was fucking amazing.
He was pretty good in it.
And as much as I'm still skeptical about Jacob Elordi and Frankenstein, I'm really looking forward to seeing it.
Now at least know he's tall enough.
Yeah.
It's like half the requirement.
Just put some bolts on his neck and we're good to go, man.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with a Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Okay, so that's definitely the fan favorite episode. Like, that's the one that everybody's, like, using a GIF from. Segment, not episode. That's the one that everybody's always talking about, for sure. I mean, like, it's the craziest segment. But for my pick?
I think we're team segment 3, right?
Segment 3 is so fucking good.
Yeah. It's really good.
It's got to be the best of it. It looks the best. It's
and it
the
is
saddest.
Definitely the most Guillermo del Toro coded, I think. The monster in that looks very, very much like, it reminds me of the ghosts in Crimson Peak.
Yeah, specifically the one that comes out of the floor.
Yeah, the gaunt eyes. Yeah. That like permanently open mouth.
Yes.
Yeah, the special effects in this are very good.
And again, another story that is sort of just like told in glances and expressions. There isn't a lot of dialogue, but we essentially have a marriage that is falling apart because one of them has some sort of degenerative, catatonic, locked-in disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Prognosis is bad. Seems like she's always... The wife is always months away from dying, but every time the doctor comes to visit, it's like, oh, she's not really getting any worse. She's definitely not getting any better, but she's not really getting any worse.
Yeah, and it seems like Raven's End is set in America because they are going bankrupt with the medical bill.
Well, that and the fraternity stuff, yeah, but the medical bills.
Do we have fraternities?
I mean, we kind of do. They're not really a thing. It's kind of like we have football, but
like,
we don't really have football. Like, we've got all the same stuff.
You don't get scholarships for it here.
A little different. No, we don't do sports scholarships up here.
I think we do.
Are you sure?
But I just don't think we care.
I guess I don't. I'm not sure.
I don't think we give a fuck.
No. This is an awesome segment because it is... It's brutal.
It's, like, so dark.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like you're yes-anding yourself into murdering your wife.
Yes.
Like, it becomes this, like, oh, we're going to put her out of her misery, or, like, we can't keep doing this. She's not in there.
It wasn't even his idea, is the other thing. Like, he's just complaining to the doctor about it, and the doctor provides him the means.
Okay, don't put the onus on the doctor here.
Okay, I'm 100% putting the onus on the doctor.
Because the doctor was providing a much-needed bit of information that probably a lot of people in situations like this might be able to use.
It wasn't even information. He literally handed him a bottle of pills and just said, hey, just a heads up, these are untraceable.
Well, in Canada, like I was saying, we believe in self-euthanasia here.
We do. Here's the real reason the doctor's evil in this segment.
No, he's not!
He's a very nice man, don't get me wrong. But when things go wrong
with the pills... Oh, well, because he's just like, I'm not part of this.
Yeah, well, he calls him up.
Get the fuck off the phone.
He's like, something has gone wrong, the pills, she woke up, she's totally fine, and then there's a moment where the doctor's like, oh, shit, she started responding, what? Like, even I'm realizing this was a mistake. He goes, and then she fucking fell down, and now she's injured, I think she's dead, He just takes a half a second and he's like, you got to get rid of that body, and then hangs up. This is how you know the doctor did something wrong.
It is kind of sad, though. So he does give her the pills. She does kind of make some motion. And who knows if maybe that's the pills themselves or what jogged her into, like, acting because her body's shutting down. Or you don't know the circumstances. Either way, her hand moves. And it's like, oh, fuck.
Her hand doesn't even move. Her hand reaches out and grabs him. Like, she's saying, please, God, help me.
And then he tries to, like, get her to throw it all up. And she throws up some of it. And then she collapses and her head gets impaled on, like, an iron bunny because she likes bunny statues.
Yes.
They also happen to be the only witnesses to this murder.
Throughout this whole segment, he's feeding her pills. Like, he's putting the poison into the soup. He's hand feeding her the soup. And, like, the bunnies, close-ups on the bunnies watching. We see what you're doing, motherfucker. And, like, he'd got her this gift, like, one final bunny, like an Arctic fox or something like that.
Arctic hare.
Arctic hare.
An Arctic fox is not a bunny.
This is why Kim's on the podcast. Because I don't know words. And it's a very pointy, sort of like looking up bunny.
Looking up bunny.
How do I describe this?
Sharp? I don't know.
The bunny's head is
impalable.
It's very impalable. And because she can't hold up her own weight, she falls down, impales herself on it. And it is comical.
Like in the eye.
Yeah. It's surprising how funny the segment is because it is kind of heartbreaking. Because he picks her head up. He's like, oh my God, honey, no. And then he accidentally lets go of her head. Hits the table again and it gets impaled even further. Like she's definitely dead now. Awesome.
Yeah. And then he's trying to dispose of her body, puts her in a trunk, and she doesn't fit in the trunk. So then part two of this, oh, this is now a murder. He's got to dismember her.
Oh man, this is... so brutal. Like, imagine going from just trying to do something nice.
I wouldn't say nice. I mean, okay. It was as much for him as it was for her. But
that's true. But, like, trying to do something compassionate is maybe the...
Compassionate's a good one to use. Okay.
And then you just... It's indistinguishable from, I hit her over the head with something, chopped up her corpse, and dumped her in the river.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is the absolute worst case scenario. He got them both dressed up like they were going out for a fancy dinner before this happened.
They were going to have a nice final date.
Yeah, he was really making this a special moment, and it is now a living nightmare.
Yep.
And then, he takes the elevator ride to hell, like, literally. Like, he gets in the elevator, there's a whole bunch of just, like, slapsticky things that get in the way. Like, he's trying to get the body out, and somebody's trying to get in the elevator, and he closes the door in their face. And then the elevator breaks down. Like, everything that can go wrong is going wrong, and eventually once the
elevator... Oh, my God, and the blood spilling all through the elevator, and he's trying to, like, like, clean it up with his tiny little coat or whatever. You're just, oh, it's not doing anything.
But it's some point, the elevator starts to move again, and it keeps going down and down and down, and it's going below the basement level. It's going like 100 floors down underground.
This is such a magical, spooky ending.
Yes!
Because, like, they're eventually going so fast that it's almost like they're in space and they're in zero gravity.
Yeah,
and,
like, they're all free-falling.
The blood droplets are floating, and he's floating, and the trunk lifts up, and it opens, and this monster version of her comes out.
Yeah.
And they embrace, and she makes him put his wedding ring back on. And then you realize, like, she did not consent to this compassionate ending.
Man, incredible segment.
But what I gathered from this watch that I don't think I noticed in watches previous, so this is the only story that's prompted because we are in the embalming room and we are with the wife's body.
Mm.
And the wife's body isn't dismembered. She's not impaled in the eye, but yeah, she does have the bed sores. And how the story actually ends is he's just like babbling in the elevator,
yep,
but there's no trunk with him. So I think just the act of poisoning her was too much for him.
Sent him into a huge spiral.
She dies, but she dies a lot more calmly.
But it still drives him mad.
Mm-hmm.
It's the very Edgar Allan Poe.
Because I was thinking about it. I was just like, well, that corpse isn't missing legs. And also, there was no impaling on her face or anything, but yeah, she did have the bed sores.
That's right. I forgot about that because we're doing this autopsy of Jane Doe thing where he's like, look over here. This is bed sores. And up here, a little crust of poison or magnesium. You know, like we're going through all of the evidence, mm-hmm, that's leading us to figuring out how people died. And more importantly, and he points out why they died. Like, it's not that he just knows.
Which
what
is the opposite
them
of like what they tell every mortician yeah ever.
Morticians they're not here to solve anything. They're just here to embalm and say, sorry for your loss. Here's the check. You know, like there's
even coroners, like they don't want the fucking why.
No.
They just need to give you the fucking how.
Exactly.
Like, what's it's in not the liver and like how cut open everything else is.
How much does the brain weigh? Like it's not a CSI episode. Like that you let somebody else do that. You just give them the info.
And that's how you remain bipartisan.
Yeah, but you still totally make you still totally
you're like
make
the
assumptions.
Husband did it.
Yeah, exactly. which brings us to our final segment, which actually kind of has its own little horror short inside the short, which is pretty great. I love when we come into a segment and it's somebody's watching a movie on TV, and then you pull out to reveal that surprise. It's kind of obvious here because it's almost like the beginning of Blowout where we think we're in a slasher and then we get to like the killer's following the girls through the room and he peels back the curtain and he goes to stab her and then the scream is like, oh! You know, like, and we reveal that it's a movie inside a movie. The vibe, the look of the short is not the same as the rest of the anthology. Mm-hmm. So you know pretty quickly
what's
going on.
It's like a touch hokier, but you also get yeah a title card that says The Babysitter Murders.
Yeah. At first you're like, oh man, I want the Babysitter Murders. The Babysitter Murders would be great. And you get the Babysitter Murders.
Oh, we're still in the Babysitter Murders.
Yeah.
So this segment's unique in that this isn't a story that's being told by the mortician. This is being told by the girl.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, I got a story for you.
Yeah, because there's been a lot of, there's been a casket that we have been following this entire segment.
Like, tiny little boy casket.
She showed up to the funeral parlor after the funeral of this little boy. And she has kind of just been like following this casket from upstairs down to the basement as he's telling her all these stories.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's finally explaining what happened to the little boy.
Well, and before we get into the story, she's like kind of playing that it's her fault and that she should have saved him. And so the story that we hop into, you're like, oh fuck, we're gonna find out how this boy died.
Yeah.
And we're immediately with her, and she is the babysitter who happens to be watching a movie called The Babysitter Murders, and you're like, oh fuck, shit's going down tonight. This boy's dying.
Mm-hmm.
The weirdest thing about this segment is that she listens to the voicemail from the parents or whatever, and they're just like, hey, we're going to be late. Feel free to like help yourself to whatever, eat anything in the house. And she immediately starts making like a 5-course steak meal.
Yeah, it's like cordon bleu or something. Yeah, like she's really going all out. If I came home, I think at first you'd be like, wow, you just used up all of our dish, like all of our produce and like a whole meal that we had planned. Like it's as though she cooked the entire Thanksgiving turkey.
Yeah.
But wouldn't you also kind of be impressed? You're like, damn,
I guess you made all this?
You were hungry?
Yeah.
Do you leave a recipe? I'd like to make this.
When you say like you can take anything you want out of the fridge, like I assume it's, you know,
soda.
Yeah, like not the roast beef for the dinner on Sunday.
Just like, yeah, you want to have some crackers? Have some crackers.
Yeah, like if it's open, go ahead.
Don't open the chest freezer. Defrost like a whole Cornish hen and go to town. But yeah, it's exactly what she does. She's like, she's got the fucking like the meat cleaver out. She's like tenderizing a bunch of stuff. I don't know any of this shit.
Yeah, and there's like a meat grinder, and you're like, that's getting used. And it yeah, does.
It sure does. Like classic babysitter urban legend horror story stuff. At some point, you find out that a power outage has caused the lunatic at a mental institution to escape. And it's like right around that time that some weird fucking guy is in the house, and he's got a head injury.
Yeah, and he's, like, bleeding, and he's just not looking great.
Yeah, and, like, we also see that there's a smashed window. Like, she doesn't notice it. It's, like, when she's going out to take out the trash and stuff. This is, like, immediately after she's checked on the kid upstairs. And then there's just, yeah, this weird guy just sitting on the couch, and he doesn't really know where he is. And he's an unpredictable element in the scene.
Can I tell you something? You may have known this story. You may have heard this before, but
I know exactly what you're going to say. This story is amazing.
So this is a true story. My grandparents live off a main street in a small town, and up that street, maybe 2-minute walk, is a mental hospital, and this happened when my dad was very young, like 6 or 7. My grandparents were not home. I think it maybe was just him and like his younger brother, but some man escaped and ended up in their house and didn't know where he was.
Sweet.
And my dad was like, what the fuck? I think he ended up calling like the police or something and they came and got him. But like, they just like sat and watched TV with him until the police came.
That's insane. This is like the stuff
that
would make...
It was the babysitter murders.
Yeah. Your dad could have just as easily grown up to be a horror film director, right? Like, didn't Wes Craven base most of Freddy Krueger on a creepy guy that he saw out of his window who tried to get into the house?
When he told us about it, it was just like, how have I never heard this story before?
He's like, oh yeah, I was in an urban legend once. You're like, wait, what?
Yeah, the man with the hook hand. I know him.
Yeah. Carl. Nice guy. Scared the shit out of me.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that's a wild story.
It's crazy.
I love imagining the 20 or 30 minutes of them just like, so you want to watch some more Rocky and Bullwinkle?
Can you imagine if my grandma was home, though? She would have fed him.
Probably.
She would have made him fucking dinner.
Nothing would have been any different, but she would have cooked him a meal.
And giving him, like, a bag of cookies for the drive home.
Yeah, and then gone to visit him every week. He'd be at Christmas. Like, by the time, like, if your grandma was home, he would have been at Christmas every year.
Oh,
you'd be like, who's Carl? Like, who's Uncle Carl? who's he related to? Like, oh, it's like a crazy story. You wouldn't believe it.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
That is terrifying. But yeah, so I guess stuff like this happens.
It seems. Yeah. Small towns, man. Anything gonna happen.
Where were we?
We were talking about the lunatic in the Babysitter Murders who's got a head injury, doesn't know where he is, and it's at some point just starts attacking Sam.
Yeah, and then they're like really fighting.
They're going at it.
And you're just like, wow, this is some crazy shit. Like, she is final girling.
Yeah.
Like, she is putting his hands in the meat grinder that we saw earlier,
man.
And definitely pinpointed.
It's brutal.
She's got a cleaver. She's got a meat mallet. Like, they are fighting through this house.
Mm-hmm. And then, like, the parents come home. Imagine.
Well, because they know about the guy that's, or they know about the escapee from the mental hospital.
Yeah, they're pissed. They leave another voicemail like, why aren't you answering the phone? Blah, 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 blah. Like, they have heard about it because the father is the doctor who we've seen in the previous segments. Like, he's the one who's seeing Jake when he's pregnant. He's the one who gives the other guy the pills. He is a unmistakable menace in this community by the sounds of it. I mean, clearly he's not locking the doors of the mental institution. It's a small town. I'm sure he also runs that. This is, most of this movie is his fault.
Actually, surprise cameo from from the guy from the second segment in this segment as like the police officer on TV. So good.
So goddamn funny.
So good.
But when the parents come home, we've got the aftermath of like all of this fight that's going on. There's blood everywhere. They're freaking out. They're looking for their kid. They can't find him. And then they smell dinner cooking. Like, what? This doesn't make any sense. Who's going to make an entire 5-course meal when you say you can go in the pantry and take whatever you want? So they open the oven to see what's in there. And then they scream in horror because she cooked their fucking kid.
Well, you're missing like the call out that they see the guy's body and they're like, oh, Sam. And you're like, that's the babysitter's name.
Yeah. They know him, but not her.
Yeah. Great. Good stuff. Incredible. Love a switcheroo.
Love an incredible switcheroo.
A great switcheroo. Also, this segment has one of the greatest head smushes of all time. A TV is dropped on Sam with the camera inside the TV.
Yeah, so you see the whole head smush happen.
The smush from the glass. It's so good.
Pretty good, yeah.
So gooey, so gross. Looks like a gusher. Love it.
It does look like a gusher. I've got a little list that I keep for myself. I've got a couple little lists that I keep for myself on Letterboxd. One of them is like good head explosions. Some of them are also just like super nerdy, like good transitions. but yeah, like 100% adding this to the good head smush / explosion list.
Yeah, good stuff. Comes right at the right time. You've been watching fighting for a bit, and you're like, "When? How is this going to end?" And then head smush, and you're like, great.
Yeah.
Love it.
Because normally it's like somebody gets stabbed, somebody gets hit, they fall down, you see a blood pool, you know?
Yeah,
like,
we've been seeing a lot of like meat tenderizing and stuff in this segment, so it's nice that we get a denouement with
it. Yeah, we get a real nice mwah finish. Yeah, the closing of the wraparound is essentially is Sam. Like, we don't even really know her real name.
Yeah, we do. It is... Oh. It is Charlotte.
Charlotte.
The TV says it.
That's, oh, okay.
When the TV reveals that, like, the escapee is the woman. Yeah.
Got it. Okay, so Charlotte is now talking to the mortician. Was it Montgomery Dark? I think is his name, right? She stabs him, thinking like, "Aha! I've done it again! Like I'm gonna take my finger as my little trophy
tooth.
Tooth, right? She's the tooth fairy. I'm gonna take my tooth. Why did I think finger?
I don't know.
Yeah, whatever. I'm gonna take my tooth because I'm the tooth fairy, and I'm gonna
is
escape.
She a tooth fairy? Did
they
she say that?
Something about it's in the newspapers.
Oh,
in the beginning
okay.
Of the movie.
All
like,
right.
There's a little kid throwing out newspapers,
that's
and it says
fun.
Something about the tooth.
What a
fairy.
great angle.
So she stabs him. She's gonna leave him for dead. She's got her tooth. She's on her way out,
and he's like, "Joke's on you. I'm made of yellow goo."
We're also in like a library sequence at this point.
You've underestimated your opponent.
Yeah, this is a lot of that. It's pretty great. Yeah, and like we're talking about all the stories and all of the horrors that live here. And he's like, "What if I told you that these were all your stories?"
And then a bunch of books fall out, and all these little like puppet evil burnt baby boys come out.
They're
all missing their teeth.
They're all missing their teeth. Yeah, they come out of the ground like they're breaking through hellfire, like something out of like Constantine or something.
It looks like the Simpsons intro for Treehouse of Horror.
Oh, yeah, okay. Sure. Instead of like climbing toward the couch, they just fucking kill her. They take their tooth and they put it back in their skull. What a great little finish.
So cute.
Their unfinished business was getting their tooth back.
Aw. They are very like Sam-coded from Trick or Treat.
I think so too.
Yeah, I love them.
Yeah. They actually, every time I see them, I think of the guy who's burnt to a crisp who died smoking.
In Beetlejuice.
Yeah. It's exactly what they look like, right?
Very much so.
Yeah, and so now the whole gag is that that Charlotte is going to become the new mortician.
And he gets to retire.
And he finally gets to retire. He does not really get to enjoy his retirement because when he walks outside and he goes into the sun for the first time in I don't know how many decades, he just like poofs into smoke.
I love that he didn't know.
Yeah, I think he was uncertain about how it would go down.
He's just like, I'm going to the beach.
Do you think he's also a bad guy?
Oh, I don't know.
We've spent so much time with him and we love him so much that it's hard to imagine that he's a monster.
I haven't thought of it.
Yeah.
And I don't care to.
And not for now. Not this year. Not this season. But yeah, we see Charlotte. She's the new mortician.
I'll wait until he makes a prequel. Hopefully we get one.
That'd be sweet. Yeah, we see Charlotte. She's the new mortician. The kids are coming. She's here to tell more spooky stories and probably continue killing kids, I think.
It seems like she's still doing it.
Yeah.
She gets a great bouffant, though, when she's undead.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. God, what a good movie.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's not often, rewatchable.
Not often do you get a horror anthology that, one, the segments are all really fun and great, but that the wraparound is also just as good.
Uh-huh.
Normally, something falters in the process because you're either, you know, trying to hit a runtime and you're cutting down the main story so that you can fit all your segments that you want, or vice versa. And nothing feels like it's been stolen from. Everything feels like it had the right amount of time to breathe. Like, every story feels like it was the right length. There are shorter, more simple stories, and then there are slightly longer stories. And the wraparound doesn't overstay its welcome.
No.
It sets you up for more of this world that you could maybe have a mortuary collection too if somebody maybe wanted to make that.
Somebody wanted to get up their fucking ass and let it happen, yeah. But yeah, like, the wraparound is also, it's its own great little story that ties into at least one of the other stories. I mean, they've all got a little bit of connective tissue in them.
Doctor.
The doctor, for sure, yeah. But yeah, it's great when it is its own story that has to be told in segments with breaks, is the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't love it when a wraparound story is just a short that you chop up and stretch out over the runtime of the anthology.
And there's no reason why it's being interrupted.
Hello, VHS franchise. You know, like, the wraparound is its own art, and that is a hard thing to do, and to get it all to fit together is real tough. I mean, that's why we all sit here and celebrate movies like Trick or Treat every year, because it's an impossible task. Because
it doesn't really have a wraparound. Like, it's all just a movie that you watch.
Yeah, well, I mean, Sam is the wrap. Like, it's a recurring character that sort of, like, brings it all together, but that's kind of about it, yeah. I love an anthology at Halloween. More than anything.
So good. And I think I like this movie even more now, and I was worried revisiting it that I was just like, am I gonna love this as much as when I first saw it?
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
I didn't think it was going anywhere.
And just, like, the songs coming on, I was like, oh, the songs are good! I forgot that I love the songs!
Oh, man, still hits, still works, still one of our favorites.
I'm so glad I'm a goldfish. It makes, like, rewatching good things great.
I mean, I remember most of everything of this movie, and it's still a banger. So,
Worry. One thing we didn't mention that I think we talked about when we interviewed Ryan, because I think we interviewed him around the release of this,
yep,
that The Babysitter Murders was originally, like, a short on its own that
yes.
they filmed.
Yeah.
And then they built the mortuary collection as a whole around it. So The Babysitter Murders was filmed, like, way before.
Oh, you mean the entire segment?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, because also The Babysitter Murders itself, I think, just the short in the movie, is also its own.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's a real sort of, like, Russian nesting doll thing where it's like they made this one short that exists on its own, and then there's the segment, and then, yes, then they built the anthology on top of that.
That's so cool.
My favorite thing about that, my favorite thing about our interview with Ryan is that everybody around him at every step of the process told him that anthology movies are a mistake and that they're hard to sell, they're hard to film, and that you really should consider doing something else. And he was like, nah, it's gonna be fine. And then it just became, like, a nightmare of his life for 5 years. But we thank him for it.
Well, I like it.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Oh, man, the world's a better place because we have this movie. It's so fucking good.
So good. Definitely tied, I will say, with Trick or Treat.
Okay. We're moving the needle forward a little bit.
They're on the same shelf.
Give it another year. Kim's willing to admit which one she likes more. To be perfectly honest, when we were putting together the schedule for this season, October is always a fun month because we finally get to talk about Halloween movies again. Like, we could do Halloween movies in April if we wanted to, but the time to do them is October. So, of course, we wanted to talk about the Mortuary Collection. And surprise, surprise, it actually fits in the secret theme that we built for this season. And if you think you can guess the secret theme for this season, you're going to win yourself a Nightmare on Film Street prize pack. There's a link in the show notes. Submit your guess. Cast your ballot. Try and guess what the secret theme is. And like last season, the first person to get it right is going to win the big prize pack. We've got some runner-up prizes for anybody else who also guesses it. They'll be put into
Random draw.
So if you know what the Mortuary Collection has in common with, you know,
Basket Case or Midsummer or Pieces. If you know what any of those movies have in common, submit your guess now. Win yourself a prize pack.
And while you are enjoying Halloween season, be sure to share with us everything that you're watching, or if you are participating in the 31 Day Horror Challenge that we've had going all month. You could even just start now if you want to.
Yeah, fuck it. Who cares?
There's enough time. Yeah. You can do it.
Fashionably late. Let's go.
Join us in our Discord at nofspodcast.com/Discord. There's tons of chats there where everybody's sharing what they've been watching and stuff. And just follow us on social media. Tag us in your posts and shit, and we'll check them out.
Yeah. I mean, if you're anything like us and you live in a small town who seems to constantly be at war with Halloween, it's nice to go online and see everybody else enjoying the season like they're supposed to.
I've been decorated since September 1st, so yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. I've been living the spooky life.
Well, you can live Halloween 365 if you want, and that's what we're going to continue to do in November. We thank you so much for listening to this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope you're having a good Halloween. It's our last episode before Halloween.
Is it?
It is. This is the movie we're going out on for the Halloween season.
Oh, that's pretty cool, though.
Yeah, right?
I like that.
Yeah, so send us photos of what your costumes are if you're going to parties, if you're just handing out candy at home. We don't give a shit. Happy Halloween to you. And until next time, I'm John.
I'm Kimmy.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.